In this episode, I talk to legendary broadcaster Fred Dynage. Dr. Alan Snyder is my guest in the empty compartment, and I'm talking gaming. That's all to come this week on the podcast.
This is 90s and Noughties UK, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. If you want to contact the show, email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com, tweet us on @90sandnoughtiesUK on Twitter, or check us out on Facebook, 90s and Noughties UK.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the 90s and Noughties UK podcast with me, Jamie Dyer. Later, I'll be talking to Dr. Alan Snyder from New York in the United States in his second appearance on The Empty Compartment. Three questions, one guest, all 90s and Noughties related. That's coming later. Stay tuned to find out what we discuss in this episode. But first, this. I was extremely excited but nervous the other day to interview the legendary broadcaster Fred Dynage, who I'm going to go out there and say is one of my heroes of broadcasting. I, like many people my age, grew up watching him on How To on CITV, which ran between 1990 and 2006. And I watched this show quite regularly, and it was great. I loved it. For me, he wasn't just a familiar face on How To, he was also a newsreader, and still is to this day, in the Meridian region. Because, as you know, ITV, certainly back in the day, was all split up into different regions. And Fred worked for Southern Television in the south of England. Then, in 1982, that was taken over by TVS. Then in 1993, Meridian took over, and Fred worked for all of those companies and much more around the country nationally. He's done game shows. He does a crime show or free on Sky. He has just done so much in his career. And what you're going to hear now is my conversation with him just the other day, and I can't tell you how starstruck I was. I've been interviewing for 15 years. I was starstruck talking to Fred Dynage, and we go off into all sorts of different directions. We talk about how and his years on that at quite length. We talk about the creator of How, Jack Hargreaves, who was a very popular broadcaster back in the day on Southern Television and subsequently on Channel 4 as well in his later years. And we also go on to talk about his years as a news anchor, as well as How To, of course. There's loads of stuff in here and lots of names that will be familiar, not just to our age group, but those who remember him over the past 50 years or so. And it's just amazing, because when I was doing this, I was a little bit nervous, because I thought, I am very interested in almost his whole career, you know, everything, even back there, all the stories from back there as well. And what I thought afterwards when I considered it was that How To, I don't know about anyone else, but whenever you'd watch How To, you'd always have someone in the room with you who was a little bit older than you, who'd say, oh, that's Fred Dynage. He used to be on a show called How back in the 1970s. You know, and you'd hear about all these different things. So I'm sure that not just to the age group that grew up with him then, but also our age group will recognize some of the things that he's talking about. So without further ado, allow me to introduce this interview that I did very recently via the telephone with the legendary broadcaster, Fred Dynage. Welcome to the podcast, Fred.
Lovely to be here. Lovely to be here. Hope you're all well.
Yes, hopefully so. So how have you been finding the lockdown?
Well, it was very strange because I co-present the 6 o'clock news programme in the south and southeast for ITV Meridian. But suddenly I got the call from London to say because of my advanced years, I had to go into self-isolation, had to stay at home. So I was off the program. And then they came up with the idea of, we do a sort of a kind of like a happy news spot every day where we'd mention birthdays and anniversaries. And I did that from home via Skype. And then I started using, we've got three rescue dogs, and I started using the dogs on it as well. It became incredibly popular. So popular, in fact, the dogs became far more famous than I'll ever be. And one of them in particular, Dave Dynage, became an absolute hit with the viewers. And now it's got to this, now I'm back doing my normal work. But when I go out in the streets or out in the shops or whatever, people come up to me and say, "Where's Dave?" They're far keener on meeting the dog than they are me. And if we have sort of someone around the house, like doing a bit of painting or something like that, they all want their pictures taken. Even the kind of refuse collectors want their picture taken with Dave Dynage the dog. So I've created an absolute monster, and the dogs are so popular, and they're lovely animals. They're all rescues. But now I'm back at work doing the normal 6 o'clock show, and life goes on. But it was very strange for several months. Very strange indeed. I can't say I enjoyed it because it's sort of such an unsettling time for the country and so unhappy for so many people. But hopefully, we're getting back to a bit of normality, although I'm not altogether sure.
Well, I mean, we're just going to have to wait and see on that one. But that must have been quite an experience broadcasting from home, because I'm sure that over the years you've been used to just doing it in the studio.
Oh, completely. I mean, I've been at this game now since 1964. So I've been doing TV a very long time, well, more than 50 years. And I've never been in that situation before. So it was quite bizarre. I'm also not the most technical of people. So getting the Skype up and running was a bit of an achievement in itself, but I had a bit of help on that. So it was very unusual, but the reaction from the viewers was quite amazing, really, especially the older viewers who like myself, were kind of having to isolate, having to stay at home in lockdown. And I think they kind of felt, you know, they'd got a friend in me who was in the same situation as them. So that they, you know, we could relate to each other. And it became a very, I couldn't believe it, it became a very popular spot on the programme, and people still, now I'm back at work normally, but people still talk about it. It's quite amazing.
Well, I'm sure that that people must have found great comfort in seeing you in any capacity, because certainly throughout my lifetime and beyond, you have been kind of on that news programme, well, for Meridian for 27 years, but before that you worked for Southern and TVS.
Yes. You see, I've always loved regional television in particular, because you get such a kind of rapport, such a closeness with the viewers that you do not get on national TV. They really feel that you are a friend, and people will stop me in the street and complete strangers and have conversations about their life and their family and things like that. And I'm quite happy about that, because, you know, these are our viewers and these are the people who turn the switch on every night. And without them, we'd be nowhere. So I never have a problem with that. And I do feel regional TV has got that kind of closeness with the viewers that other sort of network television hasn't got. So I love all that.
But luckily, you've had a taste of both regional and nationally, because my local area, I know you as the newsreader on Meridian, but to national viewers, you'll be known for being presenter on How, created by Jack Hargreaves, and How To.
Yes, there's How and How To. I'm lucky that, you know, I've had a variety of programs. For some years, I stood in for Dickie Davis on World of Sport, which was a network show, and I've done one or two quiz shows which went on the network, and I do crime programs for Sky, which go on the Sky network as well. But, you know, How was such a happy program for me to work on. And I started on How in 1966, which Jack, as you say, invented. And I worked on that for ages, till about 1980. And then eventually in the 90s, it came back as How To. I can let you into a bit of a secret. It's actually coming back again as How later on this year on children's ITV, on CITV. And I've got a small part in that as well, which has made me very happy, because it means I'll have been associated with How or How To from the very beginning in 1966. And we've done dozens and dozens of programs, and I've been so lucky. I've managed not to miss a single one. So I'm really looking forward to it.
I was aware that something How related was happening, but I wasn't aware that there was a new series. That's really exciting, and also quite exciting because through each version, it's kind of been very representative of the era.
Yes, I mean, and I'm sure this one will be too. It's got three main presenters who are young, so they'll be able to relate to the audience, a young audience on CITV, children's ITV. And then sort of at the end, I believe at the end of each show, there'll be a kind of little Fred spot where they link to the old boy, and he will set them a challenge or whatever. So I've got my own little sort of cameo at the end of each program, and I'm really looking forward to it. You know, we haven't started recording it or anything like that yet, but I'm so looking forward to doing it, because for me, it will like be completing the circle, you know, the show that I started on all those years ago when I think I was about 22. I was really young. I know Jack would have been, Jack Hargreaves would have been so proud and so pleased, because it was his idea in the first place. It was a brilliant idea, and the program did so well, and people still talk to me about How all these years later, which is amazing. Then,
well, you mentioned Jack Hargreaves. I mean, he was a just a personality that I don't think you really get in broadcasting anymore.
He was an amazing man. I mean, he had the program called Out of Town, which was a countryside program, and he used to go out certainly in the southern region at 6:45, I think, on Friday evenings. And it was an amazingly popular program. It got sold all around the world. It was just incredible. It was Jack's sort of, you know, life in the country, fishing and that sort of thing, and his nature notes. And he was the most extraordinary broadcaster, because he never had a script. He never had autocue or anything like that. He literally would go in the studio. He'd have his little bit of film, which had been shot by his dear friend, Stan Breyer, sadly no longer with us, or neither of them are, of course. And he would talk about the film, but he would never rehearse it. He would never prepare anything. He would just talk, because Jack was that kind of amazing broadcaster. You could give him a jam jar and he'd tell you all about it and how it was made or anything at all. He was just an absolutely brilliant broadcaster. Never used a script, never used autocue, and just, you know, spoke off the top of his head. And he was just incredible. His program, his Out of Town program, was incredibly popular, but he did other countryside broadcasts as well, then thought of How and appeared on How for many, many years. He was a terrific mentor for me, put me on How and gave me a lot of encouragement, and was a really good friend. And he died quite a long time ago now, but I miss him terribly.
I don't doubt that many of us do, many of the listeners out there. Sadly, a lot of those shows don't exist anymore. And there's only a little bit that's still there. But the thing that kind of strikes me is, one, the kind of rapport that you all had back there, and also the fact that you do play the fool guy an awful lot.
Well, yeah, it's funny how that all came about, because when Jack came up with the idea of How, we did what they call a pilot program, which was a dummy program just to see how it would work. And on that, I was so young and quite a clumsy sort of person. And on that particular program, I made so many mistakes and I knocked a couple of things over. And I think something caught fire at one stage. And I made an absolute I thought, an absolute hash of it. And then Jack said, right, we're going to do a series, I think, of 7 or 8 programs. And we did the first one, and I thought, I've really got to concentrate. This won't do. I can't be the fool. And I really concentrated and got everything absolutely right. And I was really serious. And after the program, Jack took me on one side and said, Fred, you've got it all wrong. I said, no, Jack, I got it right. He said, no, Fred, you don't understand. You were hired to be the prat. You were hired to be the fool. So I thought, fine, typecasting, you know. So I'm the program idiot, which suits me fine. And thereafter, you know, I became the butt of everybody's jokes, and I was the one who got everything wrong. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. We had such fun with it. And he was such a guide and such a controlling figure, and he kept Howe going for years and years and years, and it was so popular, it was unbelievable. It was shown all around the country and abroad as well. It was amazing.
Yeah. Did you ever find out, when you were doing Howe 2, because obviously he wasn't on screen, did you ever find out what he thought of it?
No. You see, I did the last program that happened after Jack had died. I did the last program that Jack ever did. It was made by Meridian, and it was called, Meridian had just started, and they did a program called Southern Gold, where they looked back on some of the many great programs that Southern Television had done. And one of them, they did a program all about Howe, and in that studio was Jack and John Miller and Bunty James, the original, myself, the original four on Howe. But Jack was obviously quite ill and not very well at all. And, I remember afterwards we'd done the program, and it was lovely. And I walked him back to his car, you know, and he was walking with a stick, and he got in the driving seat and he wound down the window. And I said, cheerio, Jack, I'll see you soon. And he said, no, old mate, sadly you won't. He said, well, we'll never meet again, but thanks for everything. And we shook hands and he drove off. And a few weeks later, the program was transmitted, and his wife then, his widow Isabel, said to me afterwards that Jack had sat in his armchair, watched that program go out, gone upstairs, and during the night peacefully and quietly passed on. So that was an incredible way to go, really, and that was his last program. And I'm so proud and so pleased that I did it with him, because he was a great man, and he was a great broadcaster.
My goodness, I mean that is some story and a really emotional end to what must seem like quite a long journey for you up to that point.
Yes, it was, and you know, Howe was such an important part of my life, and I mean, I obviously I went off and did lots of other programs as well, but I always kept coming back to Howe. And I was sad when it came off the air, when Southern lost their franchise, but then TBS brought it back as Howe 2, and eventually it was made up at Scottish Television. And, totally different team. I mean, that was me to start with, and Gareth Jones, alias Gaz Top, and Carol Vorderman. And again, it was a very happy show, and again, it was very popular. It was lovely, really, and it was a different. It was a different sort of Howe. It was much more up to date because, you know, kids had changed. But still, the questions are there that kids want answering. You know, how does this work? How does that work? How does that happen? Kids never change. You know, the machinery might change. I mean, it might be into computers and all and laptops and all that now and very sophisticated. But the thirst that children have for knowledge has never changed and never will change. You know, how really, in one form or another, could go on forever.
Quite possibly. And that show, I mean, I grew up watching Howe 2 with Gareth Jones and Carol Vorderman, and later Gail McKenna and Sean Lloyd and Gail Porter. But it really stretched across. I mean, I lived with my grandparents growing up, and we always watched it. They loved it. You know, it wasn't just for kids.
No, that was the beauty of Howe as well, the original Howe, that it had a huge adult audience as well. And I think that was the clever thing about Howe. It wasn't just aimed at kids. You know, there were things that adults could take from it as well. And you could always learn things from it, especially the items that Jack did, you know, these countryside items, or John Miller with the scientific items. Those two in particular could impart information to adults that even adults didn't know, you know. So that was the beauty of How, and also How Too as well, you know, that they really did appeal to a very, very wide audience. Lovely shows to work on. I've been very lucky with them.
It's a great show, and now it's all available on Amazon Prime. Which is amazing.
Yes, and you can find some of the old, really old How programs. I think you can find them on YouTube as well. I mean, it's extraordinary how they stood the test of time. You know, it really is. And I'm hoping the new series will do as well. You know, and I mean, times are changing. You know, as we know in the world of television and media, times are changing quite dramatically. But hopefully, it will do. It will do okay.
Well, definitely. But as we mentioned previously, in your day job, you are a newsreader. It's a lot harder than it looks, though, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I've done it for such a long time now. I mean, I've been fronting the 6 o'clock show here in the South and Southeast and the Thames Valley for about 36 years now. And I love doing the show because, again, it's regional. Again, you have that connection with the audience, with the viewers, which I really, really love. But before that, when I first started out at Southern TV, I'm doing Three Go Round, which was the very first show I ever did back in 64, and shows like How. I also appeared on Day by Day, which was the 6 o'clock program, usually introduced by a presenter called Barry Westwood, who was a really good presenter. And I always thought to myself, one day I'd love to introduce that 6 o'clock news program. And that became the show I really, really wanted to do. And eventually I got there, you know, and I've done it for a long time. I co-present now with Sangeeta Barbara, who's a lovely lady. You know, it's given me a lot of pleasure, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it for so many, many years. Been very, very lucky.
Well, you've been a familiar face to us in the South. I live in Bognor Regis in West Sussex, so I'm in your area. You mentioned earlier about the changeover of regional networks, and obviously in the early 90s it changed from TVS to Meridian, and you went from doing Coast to Coast on there to obviously Meridian Tonight. How swift was that changeover?
It just sort of happened virtually overnight, I think. I was on sort of on TVS on December the 31st, the night of December the 31st. I can't remember the year, but December the 31st, and then appearing on Meridian in the next year, as it were, you know, January the 1st. And that's just how it happened. And it was quite bizarre, in the same studios with many of the same colleagues, but under a different management. And, it's been Meridian ever since, you know, and to be fair, they've all been really good management. I mean, Southern was wonderful in the old days. TVS was a really good company to work for, as is Meridian, you know, so which now comes under the ITV banner. But they've all been good to work for. I keep saying it, but it's true. You know, I've been really lucky and very happy.
Well, long may it continue. We had Simon Parkin on the podcast previously, who talked about the pre-show, as it were, being in the dressing room with you and sort of talking about things. And I think he had really positive memories of the time that he worked there as a weatherman.
Yeah, he was a lovely chap, Simon. And we still miss him, to be honest, because he was just such a character, and he brought such personality to that weather spot. And he had all sorts of kind of fairly zany off the wall ideas. And he really built the weather into something rather more than it ever had been, you know, and he made it his own and gave it real personality. And of course, now he's on, he got his own show on the BBC radio in the West Country. And we still keep in touch, you know, but he's a great broadcaster. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, he could be a television front man at the drop of a hat, you know, but he seems to love radio, seems to love broadcasting on the radio. And apparently, I'm not surprised, his show's extremely popular. But as a person to work with, he was great fun, very entertaining and very inventive, and a really nice guy. You know, you couldn't share your dressing room with anybody nicer. Lovely fella.
Well, he had He had big shoes to fill because only a few years previously, Carl Tyler had retired and he'd been with you, well, since the TVS days.
Yeah, Carl Tyler was a real character. Real character. Actually, everyone thought he was a West Country boy because of that sort of burr he had in his accent. But in fact, he came originally, he was born in Gosport, funny enough. But a real character. Again, we're still in touch. Loved his dogs and has got several dogs and enters them in all sorts of obedience competitions and does extremely well. He was a great character. The viewers loved him. They've always loved the weather presenter. And before him, of course, the original was Trevor the Weather, Trevor Baker, who was a wonderful, wonderful man. And, you know, the great story about Trevor is, and one never knows if it's true, but it was all so primitive way back in the 60s. And Trevor Baker used to use for his weather forecast, and on this cue were sort of words and letters and temperatures and forecasts, all written in rubber with magnets on the back and stuck on this board. And this particular night, or particular day, the forecast was fog and rain. And he spun it round and said, let's take a look for the forecast for the next 24 hours. And as he did so, the letter F dropped off. And Trevor allegedly said, and I'm sorry about the effing fog. Whether it's true or not, we'll never know. But he was another great character, and the viewers absolutely loved him, and a really good man. And when he retired, he went to push the library trolley in Southampton General Hospital. That was the kind of guy he was. He was a man of the people, and the people loved him. And eventually his dear wife was a lovely lady. She passed on, and he went to live with his daughter in London. And again, sadly, he passed on as well. But he was an absolute legend, Trevor the Weather. Even in the end, he even had his own show, Trevor Baker's All Weather Show or something like that. It was... He was a real character. And weathermen seem to be characters. And in recent times, we've had Holly Green, of course, who's now on maternity leave. She was at Meridian, and she was very popular. And now we've got Philippa Drew standing in for her, again, a very popular person. You know, weathermen and women tend to be really popular in their own rights.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Now, I'll wrap up here, but I'll ask you, because you've had such a long career, 55 years doing, as you say, how to, also the news and several game shows over the years, being a panellist on things, and of course, those crime shows and the books that you've written as well. But what's been kind of the standout moment? Is there anything that you can kind of pick out, or does it change depending on what day it is?
Every day is, you know, when you're on a live news program, every day is different, and every day is a challenge. But when I look back, you know, I look back on how particularly as a very happy time in my life. I loved standing in for Dickie Davis on World of Sport. I did two Olympic Games. I particularly enjoyed the 1980 Olympics in Moscow when I was the lead presenter in Moscow, and also did the rowing and canoeing commentary. I knew nothing about either, but you soon learn. So I loved all that. And I love what I do now. I mean, I love this 6 o'clock show for ITV Meridian in the South and the Southeast and the Thames Valley. I love doing that. It's a challenge every night. I love working with Sangeeta Barbara. But really, you know, I've so enjoyed my whole career, and I had no idea it was going to last so long. If I realized it was going to last so long, I wouldn't have worried along the way. It's been brilliant, and I can't believe I'm still doing it. And I don't know for how much longer I can keep this going or how much longer they'll put up with me. But, you know, whenever the end comes, I can look back and think... and say thanks very much, because it's been absolutely brilliant.
Well, long may you reign in that department. And I'd like to say, Fred Dynage, thank you for appearing on the podcast today.
Thank you very much, Lee. I've only got one thing left to say to all of your listeners, and that is, it's how, but only for now.
And thank you once again to the legendary broadcaster, Fred Dynage. And I have to say that listening to that all over again, I mean, I was nervous, yeah? I was very nervous talking to one of my broadcasting heroes. And it's great. And I do wish him all the best for the future. And I look forward as well. I wasn't expecting him to mention a brand new edition of How, either, simply called How, which is supposed to be coming out in the near future, hopefully. So we'll have to look out for that. Might have to do a review of it on a future episode and kind of compare it to the original series. And before we move on, I would like to say thank you to podcaster Jack Haywood, who you'll remember as being a guest on last week's podcast, who very kindly helped me set up that interview with Fred. And he does an amazing podcast based around children's television of a similar era to this podcast. And it's predominantly just one-to-one interviews. And he's interviewed so many people. He's done Gareth Jones of How To. He's done Dave Benson Phillips. He's done a bunch of puppeteers from down the years who've worked on things like Rosie and Jim and Roger and the Rotten Trolls. And he's also interviewed Fred Dinage as well. And it just came up in a conversation. And he said, Would you like to talk to Fred? And I thought, oh, that would be interesting. And I do recommend also checking out Jack's interview, which he conducted a couple of years ago. And, it's well worth checking out. That's Jack's Throwback Attack. And it's available on all your favourite podcast providers. Once again, thank you, Jack, for helping me make one of my dreams come true there. And right now on the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, it's time for the empty compartment. Three questions, one guest, and hopefully more random the better. I'm joined once again by our stateside friend, Alan Snyder. Thank you once again for joining us, who does a great podcast called Booze Your Daddy. Can you tell us a little bit about your podcast?
My name's Alan Snyder. I have a podcast called Booze Your Daddy, B-O-O apostrophe S, Y-O-U-R-D-A-D-D-Y. And it's kind of, it's a play on word, booze, like we're drinking, but also who's your daddy? My co-host nickname's Boo. I'm Daddy. We tell funny stories about times, things that have happened in the world that we put our foot in our mouth or made a complete jerk of ourselves and just try to have a laugh about it. We play a little trivia, keep the episode short to about 30 minutes, and that's it.
I can certainly recommend your podcast for those who haven't seen it, and we'll link it up in the show notes of this particular podcast. Anybody who's familiar will know the format right now that we're going to be doing here. So I ask a question first. And my question to you, because once again, our guest is in New York in the United States. Some of these questions are going to be UK based. Some of them are going to be a little bit more universal. My question to you is, was rap music better in the 90s?
It's so funny. I feel like every time you ask a question, I'm about to ask a very similar question. This is good. We're on the same wavelength here, my man. I think, was it better? It's all relative. And one of my lines I give when I'm talking to people is that your favorite music, one's favorite music, is that was when you were in high school and college. Whatever those years were when you were 13 to 20, those are the years that defined you. And I have friends that come in and they talk about different things like, oh, this is a good song. This is an old school song. And what's old school to you? Because when I grew up, it was after the Public Enemy NWA years. And that's when I was starting to come into more your Puff Daddy, Eminem, 50 Cent type of thing. So was it better? I think yes, because I really enjoy all types of music. I'm telling you, you will not find anybody that has a more eclectic taste of music. I know Broadway. I know country. I do think there's good country. There's a lot of, my baby left me, my tractor's broke, and I need a Budweiser songs. But there's also good country out there too. I enjoy rap music. I'm not sure what's happening right now. because I've tried to listen to Billie Eilish and I've tried to listen, although you wouldn't call her rap, but I've tried to listen to some of the new songs, and we call it trap music. I don't know if you know that term, but it's very gangsta, thuggy. It's just, it all kind of has the same, and then they just start rapping about anything. I live in New York City here, where people are on the subways and they freestyle rap for whatever reason. Maybe they're going to get picked up or something, who knows? And it's just not good. I don't know. I need a little bit more of a hook, more of a melody. You know, we use the term earworm, something that you hear and the rest of the day you're just in your head going like, oh yeah, there you go. And then I'm the type of person, when I hear a new song, I put it on and I'll listen to it on a loop for days and days and days and days. And I want to hear it. I want to hear it. I haven't heard a new song, so to speak, in a long time that has really made me just stop and go, wow, that is a great rap song. That was really, really good. Now, I am getting a little older, so maybe I'm aging out of TikTok generation. But to me, I don't get it. I really don't get it. I don't.
No, I can concur with you there that I have tried listening to some of the more modern rap music and just popular music in general. And there are bits of it that are decent, and then others where I can just admit I don't understand it. And I think that was probably the case when rap kind of hit it big in the 80s and 90s. Maybe the older generation perhaps didn't understand it. I mean, where do you stand on Vanilla Ice?
Where do I stand? I guess Vanilla Ice, I enjoyed Ice Ice Baby, you know, his big hit. Did I think that he had sampled that beat from the famous Queen song? Absolutely. And I hope he paid all the royalties in the world. And then his guest role in Ninja Turtles 2, you know, go ninja, that was really cheesy, but I was, I don't know, 11 years old. So the Ninja Turtles were the coolest thing in the world to me. So I thought that was great. Vanilla Ice, I didn't hate, I wouldn't consider him a musician. But then he got, you know, he did the reality TV thing for a while. And then there is a movie that he is in where he pokes so much fun of himself. It's called That's My Boy with Andy Samberg and Adam Sandler. And that is of the newer Adam Sandler movies that I don't find so entertaining. That movie is hysterical. And they call him Uncle Vanny, the whole white. And he's famous for being himself in the movie, and he's willing to poke fun of himself. And I enjoy that. I think that's really, really funny. I separate him from Milli Vanilli, you know, from back in the day, where that was completely fake. Those were lip syncers. That was not real. I don't give them any credit. I will give Vanilla Ice some credit, especially because when it's karaoke night, that's one of my go-to songs. I love Ice Ice Baby. All right, stop, collaborate, and listen. You know, that is, as soon as that song goes, it's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, definitely. Whether rap music was better in the 90s, I think it's subjective. But there we are. We'll move on to the second question here. What have you got for me?
So again, it's funny that you asked about music because, you know, I've been debating on what I would ask. I have to ask a Brit their opinion of the Spice Girls, because here it was huge. I mean, Spice Mania and everything that happened. And I actually lost a bet somewhat recently because I believe the oldest one, the redheaded girl, Jerry Halliwell, I think her name is.
Halliwell,
thank you. She's not that old. They've been around forever. They've been famous. I really was like blown away how young they were. I'm curious how seriously as artists that you guys took them. Furthermore, after doing some research, I have no idea who Robbie Williams is. And when I looked up, you know, the top UK performers, I think him, or he was a part of a band, was on the UK pop charts number one for 90s, for 2000s. I think he might have been at the top. I asked my girlfriend, I said, who is this person? I've never even heard of them. And she's like, oh, huge hit over there. Here, nobody cares about him at all. So I guess my kind of question back to you is Spice Girls, Robbie Williams, where does that lie? Like, was that just teeny bopper, nobody cares? Or was that serious music?
I think in terms of serious music, I don't think it was, although I think at times Robbie would want you to think it was serious music. There's kind of two questions there, so I'll try and answer them to the best of my ability. So the Spice Girls were massive. Okay, they were absolutely massive. I think they were seen as this commercial thing. Lots of bands came afterwards, tried to copy them. They were massive. They had Christmas number ones. They were all over the TV, girl power movies.
Nobody came close though, right? No. Not a single person. Because here we were manufacturing. And manufacture, by the way, is the best word that you use. Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, O-Town. I mean, they were literally getting five good-looking guys. Here was the recipe. Put them in a pot, and then they were just cranking out music. But nothing came close to as far as girls, correct?
And pretty much, although women. In a slightly different way, they were manufactured in that sense. And they were put together because some of them had done TV work before, little bits of singing and stuff before. But together they were absolutely massive. And like I say, they did movies, they did TV shows, all sorts of different things. Robbie Williams was in a band called Take That in the early 90s. And he split from them in the mid-90s, about 95, and pursued a solo career where he got in with bands like Oasis, who were like a massive like guitar band.
Oh, I know Oasis. They're huge here, yeah.
At that particular moment in time. And so Robbie had been doing this sort of pop dancey stuff with Take That and ballads and all that, you know, boy band stuff, basically. They were massive here. And then he went off into this kind of guitar-orientated direction, more along the lines of Oasis. And around that time, the lead singer of Take That, because Robbie was one of many, and the lead singer Gary Barlow tried a solo career and kind of went up against Robbie, and Robbie won. Gary was the songwriter. He was the guy that wrote all most of the songs, like the big hits, the ballads, everything else. Robbie was the showman, the entertainer.
So it was the John to the Paul type of thing, to put it in Beatles terms.
That sort of thing, yeah. In answer to your question, the Spice Girls were massive, and Robbie is a magnificent showman.
In your mind, how seriously do you take either of those two artists?
I probably take Robbie more serious than the Spice Girls because Robbie has written his own songs. And with Guy Chambers, his co-songwriter, he wrote some amazing songs, Angels being one of them. That is a phenomenal record. So, yeah, he doesn't always get the credit that he deserves. But the Spice Girls, I think, were more on the manufactured side. When they came back, it was a lot more serious, I think, and certainly when Take That came back without Robbie, because they went on for like a year after Robbie left and then split up themselves and then got back together 10 years later. Every time you've seen the Spice Girls since, it's sort of been based on that Take That model because they were massive. It exploded. So, yeah, it's amazing that you mention those two worlds in the same space because they have collided occasionally.
Yeah, and it's just funny because for me, those were the two when I looked up the best. And if I'm missing somebody big that you would put in there, like, oh, the biggest hit that we had from the 90s to the 2000s, please feel free to add that in. But those were the two names that came up. And for me, I'll just say I have a younger sister. I have a girlfriend who loves it. I can name five Spice Girl songs without trying. I've never heard of Robbie Williams. I was like, did they spell Robin Williams wrong? I mean, what? I'd never heard of him. So I'm curious, was there somebody else in there that you would throw as a pop massive success that I didn't know about or should know about?
I wouldn't say they were massive, but there's a few sort of in and out of that era. People like Enrique Iglesias, I suppose.
Yeah, I know him.
That sort of came in and had massive hits. People like Ricky Martin, I suppose, again.
But I mean from over your way, though, I guess.
Over my way. I'm not quite sure. I mean, there were loads of boy bands in that era. We had the likes of Boyzone, A1, 911, you know, these massive bands that kind of came and went quite quickly. But Robbie is one of those. He is one of the biggest selling artists of all time in the UK, I think. And I think he's won more Brit Awards, the Music Awards, more than anyone else. I'm sure one of our listeners will probably say, ah, no, actually, there was this person in. And there is always someone that I'm forgetting. But yeah, Robbie was pretty massive. Thank you for asking that question. That's really interesting. So let's go on to the third and final question here on the empty compartment. This one is a listener question. It comes from Julia. It says, do you remember the old shows that were rerun in the 90s? Now, just to kind of set the precedent here, in the 90s, there were loads of reruns of like Laurel and Hardy, and we had Taxi for a while on BBC Two. We had Cheers. You know, all the old sitcoms were being rerun in the daytime because cheap programming. While these programs were made, because some people tend to get et up on dates, they might have been made in the 70s or 60s or 80s, but they pretty much become a part of our culture growing up, because you know, you see things like the A-Team on the TV in the 90s, you don't care how old it is, you just watch it. What are your memories of the old shows rerun in the 90s?
You know, growing up for me, I was probably more into the cartoons, but the one that really sticks out to me growing up where it was just so, so timeless was Lassie. You know, it was because it was black and white. And I'll be honest, nowadays when there's a black and white movie, even a movie like The Artist, which won the Best Picture, that was in black and white, it really just takes a lot of it. And I don't know if it's not stimulating the neurons in my brain, but growing up for me, Lassie was another one of those shows where it always had a good message at the end. Of course, it was always, you watch them now and it's ridiculous because it was the most predictable. Timmy's in the well. I know, we'll go get him. We'll save him, Lassie. That was a cute one that was kind of timeless. I grew up having the Brady Bunch, I thought that was always a really cute one. And of course, that was very easy to remake. And I'm sure they'll remake it in so many more years where you just bring the families together. I mean, they've done it with many different shows now where you have second marriage families. That was always a really good one I liked growing up. Taxi is fantastic. I'm actually surprised you named that. We didn't get a ton of that growing up. We have Nickelodeon, we have Nick at Night, and they play all these old shows growing up. And I didn't watch too many of them. Lucy was very good. I think Lucy is one of the timeless shows. Of course, you forget how beautiful Lucille Ball was, even in black and white, just this beautiful skin, beautiful hair. And then color TV happens. And you see her, of course, she smoked, you know, 18 packs of cigarettes a day, and her body just fell apart. That's one of the more disheartening things I saw growing up. But some of those shows are so timeless here. My dad watched The Andy Griffin Show. That was always good. You had your Columbo. Of course, they just remade Perry Mason with Matthew Rhys on HBO, and that's an old one. I wasn't so into some of those shows, but they were around, and they were good, and you can still watch them today. There's enough, Lord knows, there's enough television stations and networks and platforms. You can watch any show from any era. It's just not a problem.
Yeah, and it's amazing because I named Taxi simply because it's one of the few that I remember. Although looking down, there's this amazing resource called BBC Genome where you can look up old like Radio Times listings from whenever, you know. I see a lot of shows on there that I don't remember seeing, but of course have found out about since, such as I Love Lucy. I mean, when Channel 4, our fourth station here in the United Kingdom, started in the 1980s, they started rerunning I Love Lucy, and it became this massive phenomenon. It was extremely popular again, because that's what the rerun can do. It can create a whole new audience.
Yeah, have you ever seen any of them now? Have you watched them?
I have, yeah. My wife and I are currently binging through the box set.
Oh, wow. I just named that. I'm telling you, man, we're connected here. But Lucy was so great. And, you know, and I'm kind of now putting it together in my head. What made Lucy so funny is kind of like my podcast is she just always, she had good intentions, but there was always like my favorite episode, and I don't want to ruin it, is the Chocolate Factory episode. And it's just, she's trying to do a good job, but she's head over heels and just falling behind. And it's so slapstick, but so genius. And you can't watch that episode without laughing. I think it's so, so, so funny.
Yeah, I've seen the particular scene that you're referring to, and it is extremely funny. And it works in any particular era, even now. That brings us to the end of this edition of The Empty Compartment. But thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you for having me, JB.
And thank you once again to Dr. Alan Snyder for joining me there on that edition of The Empty Compartment. And it will be back in the next episode where I will be talking to Darren Stratton, podcaster extraordinaire. And after that, it's going to be taking something of a break because the whole podcast is going to be taking a break for a little while. So we're going to have a couple more episodes and then we'll see where we go from there. I think I'm going to stop and just do specials. Hopefully we're going to do a Halloween special. We'll do a Thanksgiving special and hopefully a Christmas and New Year special as well. And then back for series two in the new year, where we'll have more editions of The Empty Compartment. I don't know anything about the specials yet. I'm currently planning them, writing them, seeing where we go with them, and I'll let you know via the normal social media channels when I've got something. And I was hoping to do this all year round, but I think it's probably worth having a little break because we've been on 10, 11, 12 episodes now, and we need to refuel and come back. And If anybody would like to get in contact with the podcast and be involved in some way, perhaps you could present a feature, maybe just you on your own or with a friend, almost like a podcast within a podcast, or maybe you want to be a guest on The Empty Compartment, or you want to come on and talk about a particular subject, or you'd like me to interview you about something that you did back in the 90s or noughties, whatever it may be, you can get in contact. You can email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. That's 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. You can go to the Twitter page, which is at 90sNoughtiesUK on Twitter. Or you can just go to the Facebook page, which is called 90sandnoughtiesUK. And let me know what you would like to do in a future episode for a future series of the podcast. So as we run to the last part of the podcast, I normally, at this point, when we've got a few minutes to spare in our 1 hour time slot, do something called Jamie's Final Bit, or at least a title along those lines. But I thought we'd try something just a little bit more worked out. Now, granted, it's not as worked out as it could be, but please give it time. So this podcast, doing it over the past 10 weeks or so, has made me extremely nostalgic for the 90s and noughties. And quite recently, I got out my Super Nintendo Entertainment System, because for many years, I was a retro game collector. I have owned lots of machines over the years, and I had a chat with a previous guest off mic about my gaming passion and the amount of stuff that I used to have and used to play. And unfortunately, I've kind of got out of that, and occasionally I will get out some of the original machines like the NES or the Super NES and just have a play for old time's sake. I do have an Xbox, which I do enjoy, but I don't find myself using it for gaming quite as much. Maybe it's family life that kind of get in the way there, and you don't find yourself as you get older having as much time as you used to, or indeed as much inclination. I much rather do something like this, for example. But I recently got out Super Nintendo. I've just bought a couple of cartridges for the machine, which I very much look forward to playing. But quite recently, I got out Mickey Mania, which has been re-released several times, including on the PS1 as Mickey's Wild Adventure. And I can't tell you how disappointed I was when I put in the disc for Mickey's Wild Adventure and realized that it was just Mickey Mania for the SNES and Mega Drive, just re-released with new music or whatever. I mean, yeah, it looks great, and there's a little bit more graphics, and there's new levels in it, and it's kind of interesting. But it felt a little bit lazy and slightly disappointed, because I wanted a new Mickey Mouse game. But I've been playing this game for 25 years, and I'm sure any retro game person would agree with me that you don't always get to the end, because in those days it was extremely hard to get to the end of a video game. I think they're just as hard now, but back then it seemed almost impossible. And I picked up Mickey Mania, and it's been something of a week. So Monday, the previous Monday, I spoke to Fred Dinage. Tuesday, I spoke to another hero of mine for another podcast. And Wednesday, I sat down to play Mickey Mania, and I got to the last level for the first time ever. And I cannot tell you how delighted I was after 25 years to get to that last level. I think it was the last level of Mickey Mania anyway. I'll be very disappointed if I go back and it isn't actually, but I was absolutely delighted because I love that game so much. And I've played those first levels into the ground over and over and over again. And there was some great satisfaction. And I decided not to finish it because I was like, if I finish it, that's kind of the game over and done with. And I'm sure that I will go back to it at some point and try and finish it. But for now, I was like, I've got to the last level. I'm happy. And I came on and did this podcast, basically, and thought I need to concentrate on this. But my question to you before I leave you today is there a game that you played a lot back in the day but never completed and then went back years and years and years later and, unlike me, actually completed it? Have you had that happen to you? Have you gone back to a retro game and completed it? I know for a lot of the games that I've played over the years, whenever I go back to it, I am not as good as I used to be, or occasionally it's the other way around. And I found that with Mickey Mania. There were levels in Mickey Mania that I used to find extremely difficult. And for those that know it, it's all based on the old Mickey Mouse cartoons from Steamboat Willie up to then the present day. And I always found it fascinating. And I look forward to revisiting it and hopefully finishing it because, like I say, a lot easier than I remember it being back in the day. I used to get so angry at controllers. I'm sure people have had a similar experience to me back in the day when you're grabbing your controller and you literally throw it to the ground because it's like it's so frustrating, certain levels. And I think non-gamers don't quite realize how frustrating it can get when you can't do something and you try again and again. And a lot of the games back in the day were very unforgiving. They'd literally just send you all the way back right to the beginning of the game. And luckily, some of the Disney games are a little bit more forgiving. They will send you back to where you came from. But others are all the way back to the beginning. And it just gets really frustrating. And now it's kind of conquered because of save states in emulators and all that sort of thing. But I can tell you there's nothing quite like playing it on an original console. Because I played on clone consoles before. I've used clone consoles. And it has trouble with some of the more weird graphical elements. Like, you can tell that when they made the original game, there were workarounds that they used or stuff they used to kind of hide it, right? And this clone machines tend to show up those things, so they don't show correctly. And that's why you should, in most cases, use the original console that it was designed for. Okay, they don't always look great unless you mod them, but believe me, it's great fun. I don't really know what it is. I just thought I'd come on and talk about video games to round off this rather eclectic episode that started with me talking to the legendary broadcaster Fred Dynage, then went on to me on The Empty Compartment talking to Dr. Alan Snyder about lots of things, including old reruns. Again, proving that just because something was made before 1990 doesn't mean it's not relevant to the podcast. So I suppose I should be wrapping up here on this edition of the podcast. And like I say, next week there's an episode as usual where I will have lots of things. We've got a continuity roundtable next week on CITV Continuity with two guests plus an Empty Compartment with Darren Stratton. And I look forward to welcoming you next week. Please remember to go and check us out on everything. And my good friend Harrison will tell you all about it in just a moment. But from me, Jamie Dyer, bye-bye for now.
Thank you for listening to 90s and Noughties UK, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. Please remember to rate, comment, and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider. If you want to contact the show, email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com, tweet us on @90sandnoughtiesUK on Twitter, or check us out on Facebook, 90s and Noughties UK.